Author of the Week on Literary Lusts, brought to you by Radio Gorgeous.
I'm here at the Society Club with Dutch author Esther Gerritsen.
Yes, close? That's me. That's close. Esther Gerritsen.
Yeah, no,
I heard that Danny Kaye once said that Dutch sounded like a throat disease.
Yes, it does sound like they're like clearing their throat. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. But we're here to discuss your book, Craving.
Yes.
Which has been translated into English happily for us.
Mm-hmm.
When was it originally published?
It was published in 2012.
Okay. And you were originally a playwright.
Yes, I've written a lot of theatre plays, and not anymore. Now I write for novels and for film scenario.
Mm-hmm. Why the transition?
Well, I did actually already did both, but my love for literature is bigger than my love for theatre.
You also have a bigger audience, I imagine.
Yes.
As hard as it is to get published, I think it's even harder to have a play put up.
That's about the same, I think.
It's all difficult.
It's all difficult. But I found it very difficult when you write for theater that you write something for groups of people. I find it hard to be in a theater and to watch all those very intimate stories with so many people together.
Ah, so writing for a sort of a more solitary audience, you know. Because
it's much easier when I write for theater than already at my desk. I feel the people sitting beside me and I think, oh my God, I cannot write this. So I censure myself.
Me.
Yes.
Interesting.
It's so intimate. And when I write a novel, I'm shameless. I write as if no one is going to read it. And then I'm a bit shocked when they read it. And they say, what did you write? But it's harder. It's easier to forget the audience while you're writing. And I like to forget the audience.
Right. Yes, because in the if you even do imagine the audience when you're writing a novel, it can just be you.
Yes,
you know,
it's just one reader.
One reader.
But, you know, if you write a theater play and you look at the play, you are sitting there together with the people who watch it. Imagine that you are sitting beside a reader who is reading your novel and then you watch them how they read your novel. That's terrible. You would never do that.
No. Interesting. I suppose a play, I mean, it's such an intimate relationship a reader has.
Yes.
With the book. And it's even more intimate these days with people who are on Kindle because nobody knows what they're reading. Because at least you used to, you know, even have to advertise what you were reading unless you had
a book cover when you're riding in the train
Everyone
is seeing it.
Yes. Yeah, you put your book inside another book or another cover. But basically, you were advertising what you were reading.
Mm-hmm.
But now you can read entirely anonymously. And so it's
more
intimate
only
relationship.
Exists in your head.
Yes. And speaking of existing in your head, let's turn to Craving in particular.
Yes.
Could you start us out? I always like to hear the author's sort of summation of the story
or of the book.
Yeah.
For me, it's about the colliding of two totally different temperaments, and in this case, the temperaments of a mother and a daughter. And they... In this story, the daughter is a grown woman and the mother is dying and the daughter decides to move in with her mother to take care of her while she's dying. And she's not doing that because she really likes it, but it's her last chance to be a good daughter. And the mother, who actually really wants to die alone, doesn't want to be a bad mother and she doesn't really intentionally want to hurt her daughter, so she lets her move in, but they actually... They terrorize each other with their good intentions.
Because they are an unusual pair. And I think because the mother was so unusual as a mother.
Mm-hmm. She is.
And in herself, that she's brought up an unusual daughter. Neither of them prescribe to the same conformity, I would say.
Yes, they do not know. They do not behave as we would expect them, but in totally different ways.
Listen to us online, on your phone, download a podcast, or on your tablet. Radio Gorgeous, there for you.
I love the opening scene they run into each other.
Yes, by accident, yes.
And I thought, have I ever just run into my mother? And my mother's now passed. And
Never. No, and that's why they're so confused, because in the beginning of the book, the mother sees her daughter for the first time unexpectedly, and she's a bit shocked, because she's very uneasy with her daughter, and she never knows what to say. But now she has something to say to her daughter, well, because she's dying. So she thinks, there she is, I've got news.
I'm meaning to call you and tell you I was dying.
But now I see you here on the street, yes.
Oh, my God. And it is funny, because it is so shocking. And it goes on from there, that these very unconventional, for different reasons, and mm-hmm. as you say, with wildly different personalities, sort of try and cram themselves into a conformist or quote unquote normal idea mm-hmm. of what they should do.
Yes.
You know, like she should move in with her to take care of her because she's dying, and you know, her boyfriend should not break up with her until that's over with, and you know, and all these, and her mother should appreciate that.
Yes,
she's there.
And you should have a last very good conversation when someone's dying, because you cannot ask anything more. This is the last time. It's what we learn, you know.
Yeah.
Ask them before it's too late.
Yes. Yeah.
It's terrible what we do to people who are dying. Yeah. They have to have all these terrible, serious conversations.
Just let me die in peace. But yeah,
that's what she wants. She wants to die alone, which is no one can deal with that. What? She wants to die alone. Mm. We cannot understand that.
Although I think we can understand that she wants to die on her own terms.
Yes, of course.
Mm. And that a daughter still wants something from her mother as well. I mean, it is
that's
quite
not that strange.
Yes, that is quite understandable. It really ends, it does end with her mother's inevitable. It wasn't a joke. She wasn't, you know, like not dying. And she was actually
really
dying.
Was dying.
And she does it in, you know, quite a timely fashion. You know, she linger forever. So it does.
No, she does not take the scenic route.
She does what she says she's going to do.
Yes.
You know. But it does seem to me that by the end, they do understand themselves and act more like themselves. There's at least that.
Yes, this sort
not
of
resolution, but at least release.
Yeah, but you sort of give up to be the normal mother and daughter they think they are expected to be.
Yeah, it's too hard of a role for them to.
Yes.
And they've put so much pressure on it that mm-hmm. it really does break. It breaks them of that habit or of that need, or, you know, it frees them in some way.
I think they are relieved that they give up. And some people said to me, because they actually are alike and they love each other. And I said, no, they don't.
Not so much.
No.
Not really.
Not really, but they have sort of peace with who they are.
Mm-hmm. And I just wonder, it ends at such a tantalizing moment for me, for the daughter Coco. You know, because obviously she's the survivor in the story, as we have discussed. And sort of what's next for her?
Well, her life begins after this.
Yeah. And she knows herself. I think her life is allowed to be. She allows herself for her life to begin after this. I think maybe she gives herself that finally.
I think that's a hopeful explanation.
That's not the Dutch explanation. Maybe that's a sort of more American reading of the matter.
That's true. It's hopeful. It could be hopeful, yes.
Yeah, exactly. I thought it was interesting that I think Herman Koch?
Yes.
That his name? Yes.
Herman Koch.
Koch. So The Dinner is another book that's reached an English speaking audience.
Yes.
And I wanted to know what what that experience is like. Were you involved in the translation? What did you think of the translation?
Well, I was not really much involved in the translation, because I always think, well, my English is not that good that I can say any wise thing about how it's translated. So I just gave all my confidence to the publisher and the translator.
Mm. And have you read it in English or no?
No, I'm afraid to. But I also don't read when my book is finished in Dutch. I don't read it again.
Really? That's no, it? No. You're just No. And why? Is it too hard to look at again?
Yes, it's you're done.
And you then can't fix it anymore.
You cannot fix, and you know, you cannot fix anything anymore. It's no. It's
so
too hard.
Coco's gone for you.
She's gone. She's yes. Gone.
All right. And so, what is in her place? What's next for you?
Well, I've just written another novel. It's just published in, about a young widow, about a young woman who was married to a very rich older man, and on the first page he's died in a car accident with his lover.
Ah, oops.
Radio Gorgeous, the sexy station where you'll only hear the female voice.
Tell me about your writing, because these characters, I don't know if it seems, if they seem extreme to you, but I think in their own way, both Elizabeth and Coco were quite extreme characters.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. Are those the characters that come to you?
Well, for me, in this book, often people ask me, how's the relationship with your mother after they've read
yes,
it? And, I would say, well, if there's anything autobiographical at all in this book, it's not the anecdotes or not the family situation, but the two different voices that I feel inside of me, that I think I have a Coco and Elizabeth inside of me, and I cannot choose between them.
Right.
And it's about the colliding of these two voices. And and they are a bit extreme, because I think that's how I write, that I focus so much in some aspects of a character, and I make them bigger, so they become more extreme. But I always hear that readers say that, and they say in one sentence, I recognize everything, and they are so strange.
Yes,
so in one sentence.
Absolutely. And as a mother myself, you know, there's a lot in Elizabeth that I see, and also, I think there's some supposition that Elizabeth might have, you know, be on the autistic spectrum.
Yes.
So I think we can say, without giving too much away, I think we can say that there is a dispassionate aspect to her and a pragmatic aspect to her personality.
Yes.
And I think that it's very interesting, because that's something that's coming up a lot, just in the news, just factually, that a lot more women probably are on the autistic spectrum than, you know, we've always seen it as quite a male thing.
Yes.
But it seems to be coming up more and more as a female thing as well. And it just struck me as then, just like any other spectrum, anyone points out, it's like, yeah, we're all in there somewhere.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
It's a matter
of
degree.
Yeah, yeah. We just take it somewhat further, but it's true, yes.
Yeah, and the sort of anarchic wild child in Coco as well.
Yes.
You know, and looking for love in all the wrong places at all the wrong times. Well, I absolutely adored the book.
I had a lot of fun writing it.
Did you?
Yes, I did.
How long did it take you?
Well, I started with the mother. She was I started with an idea that there was an older lady who went to heaven, and her heaven existed, and in her heaven there were no people, but she didn't see all the people she knew in her life, but she sees all the objects she had
all
in her life.
All the stuff.
All the stuff, the toys she had as a child, but everything now is new and complete, and that's her paradise. And I wanted her to look back on her life just by all the stuff she had, that she would talk about the bed in which she was born and the bed in which she died. So I tried to write this really calm novel about this woman who only had a relationship with stuff. And I wrote for a year, and I had 30 pages and wasn't going anywhere. And then I thought, what's the worst thing a woman like that could happen? And I thought, there must be a 5-year-old. If she had a daughter, everything would go wrong.
Yes.
And then Coco came in, and then
explosively.
Yes, and then I got, and then the fun started for me.
I can see that. I can see that. Yeah, yeah.
So this wild child who grows up to be totally different from her mother, and who messes up everything, mm-hmm. and I had really fun messing it up, messing her life up.
Mm. Yes, and exactly. And unfortunately, it's one of the other things that's so recognizable about the relationship is they both feel like failures.
Yes,
at the end of it. Sad but true. I'm just hoping for better things for Coco afterwards.
Very good. Me too.
Well, Esther, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production for RadioGorgeous.com. Get in contact with us. Contact us on info@RadioGorgeous.com. And to sign up for our shows to come once a week into your inbox. Who can think of anything better, darling?
Let the Orinoco flow. Let me reach, let me beach on the shores of Tripoli. Let me sail, let me sail. Let me crash upon your shore. Let me reach, let me beach far beyond the yellow sea.
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production, produced and presented by Donna Freed, edited by Bree Forer.